101.9 FM KVSH. This is Jeff Hoyt, and we have a special conversation today with Laura Veers from down in Portland. Hey, Laura.
Hey, Jeff. How are you doing?
Doing very well, and we're so looking forward to your visit up here on the island March 4th at Vashon Center for the Arts at 7:30 p.m. Will this be your first time to Vashon?
My very first open mic was played on Vashon when I was 21 years old. I was, that was Bainbridge. I'm getting your competitor island mixed up. But I was working at In Context magazine, which is now Yes magazine, as an intern.
Yeah.
And I was like almost moving to Seattle, but I was still in college at Carleton. So I was just testing out the waters to move out to the Northwest from Minnesota. And I did my first open mic over on Bainbridge. And It was so terrifying. It was so terrifying. I could barely play, and my fingers shook off the strings, and there were only like two people in the crowd. But
oh, man.
That's just how I always had stage fright. I mean, now it's getting better, but it's like I'm one of those artists that struggles with that, whereas other people have different issues, like they can't write or they can't record when the light turns red or whatever. But yes, I have played on Vashon, but only a couple times over the years, like at a random like kind of house show, smaller type venues, so... It's been a while, and I mean, I haven't really been doing shows at all, like most musicians, for 2 years. I've done two shows in the last, like, month after a long break because of the pandemic. So it's nice to be getting back out on the road and doing, I'm just doing one-offs. Like, I have a show in L.A., and I have a show in Denver, and then I have my first tour in 2.5 years planned for the U.K., which has been bumped several times because of the pandemic, and that's happening in June.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you about the tour of the UK. You just have a few sort of warm-up gigs here in the U.S. before you head off to England. And I was wondering if that was a tour that maybe had been delayed because of the pandemic.
Yeah, definitely. It was planned way back, and then they kept pushing it. And I'm going to believe it when I'm on the plane. You know?
Yeah.
Just like, I think this is going to happen. Okay, I'm on the plane. It's happening.
You going to have a band with you, or what's the plan?
I am going to go solo, and I have toured over there many, many times. That's actually where my biggest audience is, and sometimes I'll bring a band, and for this round, I feel like because the pandemic has made everything so tenuous, I didn't want to have to cancel on people, so I was just like, all right, it's just going to be stripped down, and I do have a new album coming on May 27th, so it'll be nice to be able to promote that album and hopefully go back with a band later, but it's just kind of too tenuous right now with the pandemic the way it is for me to want to book international flights for four people and get all that rolling. You know, it's just like everything's still penciled in, you know?
I think Steve Berlin from Los Lobos still lives down in Portland. Do you know him at all?
I have met him, but I'm not in touch with him.
He used to live here on the island. He used to be my neighbor, next-door neighbor.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I was at his house one day, and he told me that the records that they did were almost like business cards, you know, something to leave behind for the fans before or after they went out for these two-hour meetings in the form of live performances. I thought it was a really interesting way of putting it. He was basically saying that, you know, touring is where it's at anymore because of the way the streaming services are not necessarily all the most rewarding way for an artist to get paid. Has that always been true for you? Is it's all about the live performances?
No, because I own all my own music. I've been very careful to not give it away or sign away any publishing or anything. And I was signed to a major label at one point, but they dropped me and it turned out to be a blessing in disguise because owning all my own masters in music means I do make a decent living from my publishing and streaming.
Yeah.
And so I don't need to tour. I
oh,
have
excellent.
Passive income that comes from my songs. But I've also made 12 records. So it's like my songs are out there working for me. And I feel grateful for that. And I like to tour, but I'm glad I don't have to tour to make a living. Because touring is, I'm almost 49. It's like I'm still healthy and fit and everything, but I don't see myself being like a road dog for the rest of my life, and I'm a single mom with my kids almost full time, so it's a challenge to get out on the road. So I'm very grateful that I can make a living from my songs.
Yeah, that's excellent. You do have a couple of kids right in the middle of their school years. How old were they when COVID hit?
They're almost 12 and 9 now, so 10 and 8.
Yeah, how did you do with virtual learning?
It was so hard. I mean, it was just painful for every parent and every kid, you know, like I guess some kids liked it, but my kids didn't really like it. So, and I felt like you know, luckily I did have a nanny at that time who lived with us for a while, and that was right around my divorce, and it was really, really helpful to have someone helping with the kids during that time, since I was so stressed, like figuring out the logistics of my divorce and everything and restarting my life. So I did have help, and a lot of single moms and single parents didn't. So I'm grateful for that. And she was actually, my nanny Lori was able to give me enough breathing room in the pandemic to write my new album, which comes out, like I said, in May. So I feel like, again, privileged and grateful that I was able to have the time and space to write, because it, I mean, if you've got kids underfoot, you can't sit there like pondering your soul and writing songs about your like real life experience, you know?
Exactly. Did the pandemic serve as creative fuel for you, or did it kind of shut you down? Like I talked to several creative people who said, you know, I the pandemic hit and it's just like my brain switched off for several months.
I mean, I was going through a divorce at the same time, and so it was a double duty, you know, in terms of the stress for me. And it wasn't like one of those we're friends and everything's great divorces. It was a really traumatic for me divorce. Mm-hmm. So I was stressed on so many levels that I actually wasn't able to write very well for about a year. I did write, but I didn't like any of the writing. And I think I've read about writing about trauma, and sometimes it takes time to be able to reflect on what actually happened to write thoughtfully, or to find the depth of that experience, or to be able to grapple with it. And so I think that, well, I know that several, maybe five of the songs on my new album came right at the end, right before I was recording. And that was two and a half years after my divorce. So I feel like the time was so warped in the pandemic and mm-hmm. so strange, but I was writing, but I wasn't keeping any of that stuff. And so I just needed to move it through. And then as time passed, after 2 years, I was starting to get these songs that I really liked, that were like capturing the depth of my experience, which honestly, right in the beginning, I wasn't able to capture.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like the writing you were doing at the beginning was more processing than songwriting. And then eventually it all sort of came around when you had a little bit of time and perspective.
Yeah, they were songs, but they weren't songs that were any good to me.
Yeah.
And so maybe for someone else they were, but I'm not going to release songs that I don't relate to or that I don't think are good.
How much of My Echo, which was released in 2020 during the pandemic, was any of that written during lockdown, or was it all written before COVID?
It was all done in 2019 before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So it was just mixed and mastered. I can't even remember all the timeline, but yes, all that writing was before the pandemic.
Well, this may seem like an odd choice for a first song, but I'm particularly fond of End Times, which appears on My Echo back in 2020. Even though you wrote it before the pandemic, it just resonated with me. A particular lyric that jumped out to me at the end: as I sail out into orbit, disintegrating flash of white, I'll sing for you as I'm turning into future old light. That's an awesome lyric.
Thank you. Yeah, I haven't really thought about that song in a while, but that song was, we've been getting these forest fires in the Northwest now, and it was just such a tough time in my marriage. I wrote that album before we broke up. Mm-hmm. I was married to my producer for 20 years, and we had this musical collaboration and kids and houses and studios and all this stuff. So I was writing about the disintegration of my marriage with that song, but also trying to capture some of the feelings I have around climate change and forest fires and the confusion that comes with all of that. And that, you know, yeah. And then the pandemic hit, so the song is even more appropriate. But it's a song I haven't really thought about for a while, so I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah. Here's End Times from Laura Veers on KVSH.
When I think of the end times, you come to mind. I think of the end times, you come to mind. As the wall of water comes and we tumble through the flood, I'll be dreaming of your skin lit from within when we were young. As the forest fires burn and our shoes melt away, I'll feel the cooling April wind of your song inside my brain. As the earth cracks in two and we fall out into space, I'll be thinking of your hands and all the times they held my face. When I think of the end times, you come to mind. When I think of the end times, you come to mind. As I sail out into orbit, disintegrating flash of white, I'll sing for you as I'm turning, turning into future old light. When I think of the end times, you come to mind. When I think of the end times, you come to mind.
From My Echo, released in 2020, that is End Times from Laura Veers. It sounds like a song that Colin Molloy of the Decemberists would be all about, a wall of water. And the...
Yeah, he definitely has a lot of darkness and kind of like epic topics in his songs as well.
Laura will be at Vashon Center for the Arts on March 4th, playing a show, solo show at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are at vashoncenterforthearts.org. I see you followed the path of most singer-songwriters by going to college to learn Mandarin Chinese. And
yeah, and do that.
And become a geology major.
Yeah. I grew up in a family of outdoor people and scientists, and so I always had a focus on the sciences, and I thought I would be like a scientist of some kind. But as I discovered myself in my early 20s, I realized like I appreciate science and I love nature, but I'm a writer, and mm-hmm. I figured out I my strongest path is a songwriter. And so in terms of like I've tried other kinds of writing, and maybe I'll be a novelist someday or something like that. But and I have written a kid's book, but there's something about songwriting that I remember in that early 20s really clicked for me. And so I'm really glad that I figured that out. And I've synthesized my love of science into my lyrics. And
yes.
You can hear that.
So many of your songs seem to play metaphorically with the natural world. And
yeah.
And I guess if those seeds were planted when you were really young and you started to figure out a way for them to come together, it just it must have felt like just a natural click.
Yeah, it does. And there's just always something in the natural world to draw from as a lyricist. And I mean, it's just such a challenge to make a description of light beautiful or new. You know, it's like mm-hmm. I love the classic old themes of nature in my writing. I just try to twist it around. And I mean, I don't try necessarily. Sometimes I'm trying and I'm being effortful in my writing, and other times it just comes out.
Yeah.
But I want to be poetic, and I want my work to resonate at a deeper level with people and with myself. And I do find that drawing on images from the natural world can help with that.
Do you have a personal ecosystem of choice? Are you all about the water, the mountains, the desert?
I don't have a personal ecosystem. You can hear my explorations of different elements in the different records, because like my first proper album is called The Triumph Center Veils of Orphan May, and that's very much about the earth and the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one was, I was like, oh, I'm going to do different elements for different records for a while. So then I did Troubled by the Fire, which is about fire. And then I did Carbon Glacier, which is about like ice and snow, and named after the one of the glaciers on Mount Rainier, which I'm not even sure if it's still there anymore because of global warming, but
it's not what it used to be.
Yeah. And then the next one was Year of Meteors or Salt Breakers. Yeah, I can't remember. Anyway, Year of Meteors is about air and space. And it was nice for me for many years to design them around those things so I could be like, oh, what can I say about air and space? Like, I've already written about fire. Now I can get into that other realm, like galaxies.
Mm-hmm.
Comes from Year of Meteors, which is about air and space. And galaxies is about, like, falling in love with someone and the stars filling your eyes and just, like, stuff about outer space. So then after I had I had exhausted all the basic elements, I started to be like, well, I'm not going to write to a theme. I'm just going to see what comes out.
Right.
So I stopped after a while. But you do hear certain themes coming through, like natural themes coming through each record.
Well, you set up Galaxies very nicely, so let's check that track out here on KVSH. Here's Galaxies by Laura Veers.
When you say... When you say
here on KVSH, her show March 4th at VCA, 7:30 p.m. Are you a stargazer?
I do like to look at the stars. We don't have a great view here in Portland with the lights because I'm right in the city, but I have done that a lot in my life, and I grew up with an astronomer dad, so he's a physics professor and like knows all the constellations. So, and I grew up in Colorado, so we would take these trips high up into the mountains backpacking, and he Julie show us, me and my brother, the different constellations, and they were extra bright there because we were so high up in the mountain.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I do love to look up stars, but I'm not a, like, tourist stargazer person yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to admit, I was not that familiar with your music until Case Lang Veers came along. My first thought was, okay, I'm a big Nico fan. I love K.D. Lang. I need to get to know this Laura Veers person.
Yeah.
And I hate to ask the predictable questions, but I got to ask how that collaboration came to be.
Yeah. So I had met KD backstage in Portland. She had moved to Portland from L.A. Mm-hmm. And we were playing at a benefit concert. And I said I was a big fan because when I first met her, I was like, oh, my God, it's K.D. Lang. I was obsessed with her when I was 18. And I remember her album Ingenue had come out, and I would just like sit on the floor and stare at the record cover. So it was amazing to me that I got to meet her. And then around that time, I had met Nico. Well, I had met Nico years ago at a show also, but I had asked her to come and sing on my record Warp and Weft, and she did that because she was working with my ex-husband also on some stuff, mm-hmm. the producer. And so then since I had met KD, she seemed nice. And she also knew my music, which I was surprised about. She knew my album, July Flame, because she had listened to KCRW a lot, and they had played it. So she was familiar with my music. And then I asked her to come in. She seemed nice. I asked her to come in and sing on that same album called Warp and Left. And a few months later, I got an email from her saying, do you guys want to start a band? And it was to me and Nico. And I was like, let me check my schedule. I'm free. Yeah, let's do it.
Didn't take long.
Right? I did have a new baby and a 3-year-old, so I was very busy, but I was like, actually, it was a really nice time to be asked to do that because we spent 3 years writing and producing that album.
Uh-huh.
And so I didn't feel the need to be touring my butt off, which was helpful with children that young.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a really nice way to spend some time at home with the kids and also writing and collaborating and learning to co-write. I mean, I'd never really done that before. I had done it sort of sporadically with people, but it was a pretty big challenge, especially with 3 people in a room.
Yeah.
It's easier with 2. But I had a lot of seed songs already done, like, because I'm always writing and always have like 40 extra songs lying around that no one's using.
Wow.
And so I was like, oh, I have these, you know, and if we don't have ideas, which sometimes we didn't, well, we can start with this song, and I don't care, because I'm so prolific, I don't really feel attached to my songs in the beginning. So I let them do whatever they wanted with some of my songs in terms of, here's music. For example, this song called Atomic Number, I had written completed lyrics and music, but there was just something about the song I didn't really feel like was working. Mm-hmm. So I gave it to them, and Nico lifted out all the lyrics and kept the melody and the music and just put in all her own lyrics. And then we made a new song out of it from that. And it was just fascinating to watch that process because her lyric writing style is very different than mine. And I love her lyrics. And it was just so cool to see how much a song could, like, in one way stay the same because the melody and the music stayed the same, but then radically change because of the message and the lyrics.
Well, it's the perfect way to kick off the record. I love the overlapping lyrics at the top of this song. Let's hear an Atomic Number from Case Lang Veers on KVSH.
I'm not the freckled man.
I'm not the fair hair girl.
I'm not a pan of milk for you to spoil.
While the wholesome things, the ones we make up see.
Across my heart, symbols of infinity, elements so pure, atomic.
Atomic Number from Case Lang Veers, Nico Case, Katie Lang, and Laura Veers. Is it true that you guys wanted to call your band the Atomic Numbers?
Possibly. I don't remember that, but we had a bunch of really weird names floating around. But we stuck with the kind of classic,
yeah,
like Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The funniest name that I remember Katie came up with, and I think she really wanted to use it, the Camel Tones.
The Camel Tones?
Yeah. Like a camel toe, but a camel tone.
I think
I kind of like it.
Yeah, I like it too.
We went more conservative with Case Langer. So it was probably smart.
Did you find that project brought a lot of new fans to your music?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. We played big places that I normally don't play and can't play on my own. So it was kind of a stretch for me as a performer to be like on those huge stages. But it was a great learning experience and overall very positive. I mean, people were largely coming out to see, I felt like KD because she's such an icon. And then they were sort of like, there were tons of Nico fans who overlapped. And then there were a lot of people like, who's that other lady? And so, but some of them did figure out my music from there, and it was cool.
Well, there are a few things more powerful than artists collaborating, and I think Case Lang Veers is a prime example of that. Do experiences like that make you think about other collaborations that might be down the road that you'd like to explore?
Yeah, I'm always kind of open to that, but I don't have any sights set on anything in particular, but I do feel like because I've done so much solo writing and performing, it is interesting to me to ponder who else I might want to collaborate with someday. And I'm also sort of just waiting because I kind of want to see what comes my way also instead of just like going out and hitting the pavement. I'm still kind of in an interior mode in terms of like figuring out who I am, independent of my ex, spending a ton of time with my kids, you know, painting. I started doing like large canvases and I have this new house. I moved and have a big basement for painting, like a messy basement. And so I'm kind of just like exploring different art forms and listening to a lot of music because sometimes I don't listen that much. And, you know, it's like writer's reading. You have to read a lot to write well. And I feel like because I just made a record, I really want to listen closely to music, and it's actually worked for me sometimes. Like, I can listen to music in a way that's just like, let's put on music for the dinner party and just chill.
Yeah.
But also, if I'm like really trying to grow as a musician, that's work for me. Like, that's time where I need to set it aside and be disciplined about careful listening. And I haven't done that very much in my life, period, and also recently. So that's something that's on my list is like, after I, you know, get these shows out of the way and this record released, I'm going to do some more of that. And then I think also that would potentially lead me to more ideas about collaboration with new people if I've done a lot of careful listening.
Mm-hmm. Well, as the kids get older, you get a little bit more independence. And yet the challenges of a musician who is also a parent are unique and many. You explored this in a podcast you called Midnight Lightning back in 2018. And you interviewed a whole list of parent musicians. Tell us about that. Did you glean some helpful insights from that exercise?
For sure. Yeah, that was really an important thing for me to do at that time because I was feeling, you know, there are, like you said, so many singular challenges for people who are in the performing arts who have kids, especially women. And so I chose to interview women for the first round. I may do the podcast again and interview dads, but I was focusing on moms. I talked with Roseanne Cash. I talked with Carol Kay, the bass legend. I talked with Corin Tucker from Slater Kinney and Shara Nova from My Brightest Diamond and Michelle and Baggio Cello. And I tried to get like a really vast range. I mean, there were 15 interviews, but range of ages of women, single moms and not, married and not, and, you know, different styles and different levels of fame. And I was able to get a sense of community around that the situation, which is that I'm a mom who's trying to perform and write and be a good mom. Like, not one who's just like, I'm going to take off on the road for 2 years and leave my kids with the grandparents.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to figure out how to integrate them into my life and into my musical life and also spend a lot of time with them, but also be a great musician and be at the top of my game as a writer and performer. And so, yeah, I was able to meet a lot of people that way who made me feel less isolated in my path.
And along with all the challenges, of course, the kids, I'm sure, offered all kinds of creative inspiration for you. Can you point me to a song that never would have seen the light of day if not for the inspiration that being a parent can offer?
Yeah. Sun Song is one of those. And that's from my album Warp and Weft. And it's about the fierce love that a mother feels for her kids. And I wouldn't have known that kind of love until I had a child. And I wanted to write about it in that song.
Sun Song, let's listen to it, from Laura Veers on KBSH. Is Sun Song. I wanted to point my wife to that song in particular. She wrote a book about sun worship that lists all of the songs that could have ever been, that have ever been written about the sun. She tried to get to all of them. I want to go back and look at the list and see if it's on there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that, because I've written about the sun a lot, and then I've noticed a lot of people do that. I mean, it's kind of obvious why we would, but
yeah,
it's neat to see different people's interpretations and different ways that people write about the sun.
Well,
especially in the Northwest, I feel like we write about it a lot because there isn't very much of it.
When you're on the island, I'll hand you a copy personally. Or Cindy will.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That would be great.
We're visiting with Laura Veers, her show March 4th at VCA, 7:30. You also are a songwriting teacher.
Yes.
Yeah. And in addition to everything else you do. And I read about something that you developed called Kaleidoscope Creativity Cards.
Yes.
What is that?
So it's a deck that you can buy on my website or at a show where it gives you three different decks of cards of different colors, and you pull one card from each deck and follow the prompt. It's a prompt writing game. It can be used for poets, prose writers, or songwriters. Mm-hmm. And it's a way of helping you develop a writing practice and helping you get over the fear of the blank page, which is often what I've found most people struggle with. They're like, I don't know what to write about. Okay, what do these cards tell me to write about? For example, it would say, like, for songwriters, today you're going to change time signatures within the song. You're going to write about about summer. And then the last card is an inspiration card, which might say something like, try to find a feeling of freedom in your work today. And then there'll be a quote from a famous person. And on that card, I remember it says, the purpose of freedom is to free others. And that is a quote from Toni Morrison. And
oh,
the
wow.
The inspiration card is kind of trying to help the person keep their head up, because so much of writing is so difficult because it's like, you know, solitary and isolated, and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I mean, there are days, of course, when any writer is having that awesome deep flow state where you don't need a prompt, but sometimes you don't know what to say or you can't figure it out, and having a prompt get you going can really be helpful. And that's why I invented the cards for myself first, and then I realized it was working for me, and that helped me write my album, The Lookout, which was like a few years ago. And then sometimes if I do feel stuck, I'll be like, what do the cards tell me to write about today? And then, you know, for anyone who gets the cards, you can always mix and match and shuffle the decks and get different combinations whenever you want.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be like also an improv exercise for actors, or a writing inspiration for essayists or novelists.
Yeah, it is actually applicable to a lot of different art forms, and other people have mentioned that. Like, I have a painter friend who uses them, and I was like, that's wonderful. You know, I just love knowing that I'm helping in some small way to help people feel creative and feel like they're fulfilled in their creative life.
I've talked to writers who have said that they sometimes struggle to get through the difficult parts of their books, you know, the novelists, if they make it too much about their own experiences or draw the characters too close to the actual people that are in their lives. Is that true of songwriting as well, if you become too literal, that it can be really hard to go there? Or do you have to be metaphorical at all times?
I feel like, I mean, I've tried and written all different styles of songs. Like, I started out writing, like, just funny folk songs. And, like about my boyfriend's nose or my geology teacher or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I went more into like a country old-timey style, like trying to write like an old-timey ballad with a new twist. And then I like gone into more nature imagery and metaphor and not so autobiographical, more abstract. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I kind of like just go back and forth. Sometimes I'm in like a more punk rock style, sometimes in a more like Brazilian soft nylon string guitar, simple, sparse music. And so I feel like I just try to be honest. I try to be authentic, and I try to not be afraid. Cause I've just noticed in myself, but especially in my students, there's so much fear in writing. And I think that comes with being an older person. Like, obviously when you hang out with children, they're not afraid to be creative at all. They're like little fountains of it. And that's wonderful to see. And that's actually always, when I'm hanging around my kids, it's always a reminder like, oh, that's accessible to you too. You can just go draw something that you feel like drawing because you feel like drawing, you know, and like make a cool face. And when we get older, in the teen years, we start to get that self-consciousness. And so it's our job as writers and creative people, as adults, to be brave enough to go back into those vulnerable places that feels, I mean, to kids, I don't think they feel vulnerable. They're just making stuff. So for mm-hmm. us, it feels vulnerable. And so getting in there, I mean, it's one thing to teach that, and it's another thing to be that. And I felt that a lot on this new album that's coming out in the spring. I was like, oh, you're vulnerable on a new level right now because you're writing about the disintegration of your marriage and like finding yourself as an individual in the world after 20 years of collaboration with this other person. And like so much was bound up in my ex in terms of music making as well as parenting and home life that it was a real struggle for me to make that record and feel the confidence to make it without him and to find a new producer and produce it myself with my friend and find new musicians and all of that. And then at the core of it is this like vulnerability in the lyrics. And I think that that's very, very important for writers to keep in touch with.
And we'll be hearing a few tracks from that new record when you're here on March 4th.
Yes.
Yes. Well, we're really looking forward to it. And I thank you so much, Laura, for visiting with us today. I'm really looking forward to the show. March 4th.
Yeah,
Vashon Center for the Arts, vashoncenterforthearts.org is where you can find your tickets. The show's at 7:30 on March 4th. And I want to go out with another song that, again, the natural world comes into play. Is Seven Falls a real place?
It is. It's in Colorado Springs where I grew up.
Ah, well, you don't mention it in the lyrics, but I can just feel that icy lake.
Awesome.
So that's let's awesome. Go there now and say so long to Laura. And we'll see you in March.
All right. Thanks again, Jeff. Take care.